91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. Good afternoon, Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman. We start with the topic income inequality. We'll hear from entrepreneur and advisor John Hope Bryant for his take. He's penned a book called How the Poor Can Save Capitalism, Rebuilding the Path to the Middle Class. He says the key is teaching youngsters the value of entrepreneur-type thinking. And more, this year again, Linda Gassenheimer has covered the famous Pillsbury Bake Off. The grand prize won't be awarded until today at 1 o'clock, so we'll have a breathless winner on air with us. We're pulling for the creator of the Cuban-style sandwich pocket. That's next, after NPR and regional news. And we return. It's today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper along with Bonnie Berman, Thursday edition. Could children be natural-born entrepreneurs? In bygone days, a Kool-Aid stand could be a first effort of venture capitalism. Kids also learn how to manipulate chores for cash, perhaps mowing, a car wash, or babysitting.
We begin today with noted entrepreneur, author, and advisor John Hope Bryant. In his book, How the Poor Can Save Capitalism, Rebuilding the Path to the Middle Class, he says that youngsters are the key to restoring the middle class, and he joins us from Washington, D.C. Glad you could be with us, John.
My deep honor. Thanks for having me on, and thanks for tackling this important topic.
Well, it is important. We're hearing the news, but I'll let Joe get to that. I just want to, speaking of youth, let's begin with a little about your own life. And your youth in Los Angeles and Compton, California.
Well, yes, in some ways the opposite of what you're seeing play out in Staten Island, New York, and in Ferguson, Missouri right now. I grew up, yes, in a so-called poor neighborhood, but my mother told me she loved me every day of my life when I was growing up, so I really wasn't poor. I mean, I had high self-esteem and high confidence in myself because my mother told me she loved me. And half of poverty is just low self-esteem and lack of belief in yourself. My dad owned his own business for 54 years. So I'm a businessman today primarily because I saw my father be one. And we're all role modeling, and we're all aspirational. So I really had the luck of the draw growing up, because if all you see growing up as symbols of success in your neighborhood are rap stars, athletes, and drug dealers, then why is anybody surprised that that's who you grow up wanting to be? And then a banker came in my classroom when I was 9 years old in Compton, California, and taught me a course in financial literacy. And the banker happened to be Caucasian, but he might as well have been green, as in the color U.S. currency. I think that's the only color that really matters here. We're really arguing over the wrong sort of color. I asked this guy,
Didn't Reverend Ike do that many years ago? We're not talking about black power. We're talking about green power.
Well, I mean, you deal with class, you get a race for free. So I asked this guy, what do you do for a living, this banker, and how do you get rich legally? He said, I'm a banker and I finance entrepreneurs. Man, I said, I don't know what a banker is. I mean, what an entrepreneur is, but I want to be one. And I started my first business the next year when I was 10 years old, the neighborhood candy house. And those three pillars changed my life. Now, Michael Brown didn't have that option. And I wrote a piece this morning on LinkedIn talking about the real problem in Ferguson is poverty. And jobs will solve most of these problems. The guy, Eric, I believe his name is Eric, in Staten Island was selling Lucy's, selling individual cigarettes.
Right.
I mean, he wasn't, you know, he had the wrong hustle, but he had hustle, meaning he wanted to work. He couldn't get a job. He tried to create his own job. Okay, it wasn't legitimate. Fine. Give the man a ticket. Don't sit on him. So we are literally suffocating the economic energy that can save America. A drug dealer is immoral. It is unethical. Put him in jail, yes. But a drug dealer is an illegal entrepreneur. where they're not dumb people. They're misdirected people with crappy role models, a horrible business plan, and a horrible environment. But we can turn those things around.
But you talk about this role modeling and one's environment. So if what you see are crack dealers, you model that. But how do you suggest changing those communities and neighborhoods and families and role models and have what you had with a mother? I mean, how do you change that?
I'm not just playing to your strengths here. This radio program and your format is what made Dr. King's mission and movement possible. He could not have had a movement without the media. But you have to have a strategy the media can amplify. So our strategy is what was amplified by the book The Tipping Point by Malcolm Gladwell proved that at 5% role models, every community stabilizes. Not 80% role models, not 20%, not 10%, 5%. So what we're going to do is put Hope Business in a Box academies in public schools, the toughest so-called schools, treat the young people with the legitimacy of acting like they're a client or a customer, and the school is actually the business that has to speak to that customer's needs. Give these kids a course in financial literacy, the language of money, a course in entrepreneurship, a course in dignity, values, 25 businesses a kid can start for $500 or less. We call this Hope Business in a Box Academies, by the way. The kid picks a business idea, does a pitch event in the kids' auditorium twice a year, think Shark Tank for kids. The kid gets 2 minutes on stage with a timer to pitch their idea. There are local business leaders who are judges, no celebrities, have the attainable role models. And when the kid does a good job, we fund the business up to $500. Gallup will measure the strengths of the kids up front, so we know what the kids are good at, through strength finders. And on the back end, they will measure the impact through the Gallup Hope Index of the intervention strategy. So now every school in Miami or wherever now knows which things are working and which things aren't, and I'm convinced this will crush the dropout rate. This plus starting an apprenticeship generation. Imagine not every company, 500 companies in your region who say, I'm going to give every kid a business internship right out of high school. You get a B- or better, and I'll give you a job right out of school. You just crush a dropout rate because all a kid wants is a good job or a shot at economic opportunity. And even if all you do is give the kid a $500 one-time stipend, go get a suit, I'll give you a food stipend, and I'll give you transportation money for 6 weeks intern here at my radio station. In 6 weeks, the experience will change the kid, and the kid will change your radio station or the business or the manufacturing shop or the dentist office. Those two things, creating a job through Hope Business in the Box Academies for $500 or less, creating a business internship track for those kids who have D's, C's, and F's, we want to get them to B-. Because the A-plus kids are going to be fine. Having a B-minus business compact with CEOs, those two things will transform America's youth and supercharge our growth for a new generation and create the million startups a year, businesses that this country needs to continue to thrive.
We're speaking with the founder of Operation Hope. He's entrepreneur, author, and advisor, John Hope Bryant. If you'd like to join in with a comment or question, you're certainly welcome. 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. Also, Bonnie will take your email. That's radio@WLRN.org. John, you talk about big business, or I'm sorry, you speak of the unique brand of American poverty. How so? How does it differ from others?
Well, it actually is a modern definition of poverty that is probably going to be most known as a U.S. version, but I think it's global. And it starts with non-financial definition. Half of poverty is low self-esteem and lack of belief in yourself, as I just mentioned. I talked about my own experience growing up, so it's just a lack of confidence in yourself. Talking to you, too, I can tell that you believe in yourself. Somebody told you growing up you are somebody, and you believe it. Because without confidence, you can't do your job. If you don't know who you are at 9 in the morning, by dinner time, somebody's going to tell you. The second piece of poverty is role modeling. We talked about that. Positive role models I had, I assume you had. Negative role models that surround most of the kids that we are now talking about on the news every night. The second part of the role modeling piece is environment. So basically, if you hang around 9 broke people, you'll be the 10th. And the last part of poverty is aspiration and opportunity. Aspiration is a code word for hope. The most dangerous person in the world is a person with no hope. A lot of these kids you're seeing on TV today have just, they're not skeptical anymore, they're cynical. And it's a sin for an 18-year-old kid to be cynical. I mean, you cannot have a movement or idealism without young people. They've got to believe that the world, that they can change the world or be president or be CEO or be a broadcaster. If they're not going to believe it, who will? And then that, of course, leads to opportunity or the lack thereof. So those three tranches, or what we call the Hope Doctrine on poverty, and you can be poor making $20,000 a year. You can be poor making $200,000 a year by that definition. And I think that Black America, making matters worse, are clinically 70% of Black Americans are clinically undiagnosed depressed because of 200 years of slavery, 100 years of Jim Crow, that ended basically in 1960 in our lifetime, where you were basically told, you ain't crap. And I say ain't on purpose. You ain't crap. You're not a man. You're not a woman. You're not equal. And after generations of hearing that, unfortunately, far too many of us believe it. And then we didn't get the memo, which I guess we'll talk about before the interview concludes. And that's the real death. We didn't get the memo on how power works or how money and free enterprise works. So you add those three things together, and you have the kiss of death.
Before we take a break, I'd like maybe just a brief comment from you. Discounting the most recent tabloid business with Bill Cosby, what did you think of his philosophies for African-American youth?
I thought it was the right message, wrong method. I know you're talking about a few years ago where he was basically saying, pull up your pants and take responsibility for yourself. And he was absolutely, unconditionally right about that. And we should give him credit, by the way. I mean, Henry Ford, who basically revolutionized America and created a middle class, I detail this in my book, was also a racist. Steve Jobs, who changed the world, was, if you read his book, a jerk. But he changed the world. Bill Cosby, we're finding out, it appears, has a number of foibles. That does not discount the fact that the man financed hundreds of thousands of kids to go through college, and he did have this philosophy, which was right, about personal responsibility. Now, he blamed poverty on the poor. That's wrong. He suggested that those who were, doing well had it right, and those who had no money had it wrong. That's not right. We all screwed this up. Middle-class folks screwed this up. Rich folks screwed this up. Poor folks screwed this up. Black people screwed this up. White folks. I mean, I call it the bum factor, by the way. 20% of Black folks are bums, but 20% of white folks are bums, and Latinos and Asians and Indians. 20% of Republicans are bums. I have 20% of Democrats are bums. I got bums in my family. So we have to sort of acknowledge that nobody's perfect. We all make mistakes. A senator got up. And so I think his only error back then was to point a finger at poor people and say that you are your own problem. No, we created that problem. And that's the point I'm making in my book.
We're speaking with John Hope Bryan, who's recognized as one of Time Magazine's 50 for the Future leaders. He's written How the Poor Can Save Capitalism, Rebuilding the Path to the Middle Class. We need to take a short break and we'll return. And welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and John Hope Bryant. He is the founder, chairman, and CEO of Operation Hope and Bryant Group Companies. He's written How the Poor Can Save Capitalism, Rebuilding the Path to the Middle Class. Bill wants to know, John, how can a program of getting these kids a guaranteed job out of school be baked into the culture?
Well, first of all, it shouldn't be a guaranteed job because nothing in life is guaranteed. I think what he was responding to was when I called for a B-minus business compact,
right,
where every business leader says, I'll hire you right out of school if you get a B-minus or better. We are launching that in Puerto Rico. It's being led by Richard Carrion, the CEO of the largest Hispanic bank in the world, Popular Community Bank. I went there and met with them. They just said, let's do it. I went to Jacksonville, Florida with the mayor there. He's going to launch that in Jacksonville, Florida. They're rallying business leaders there. It really takes somebody listening to your program, and God bless public radio, by the way, because you're talking more than 30-second clips. It takes somebody listening to your radio, who's a business leader preferably, or a political leader in your region, who says, who raises their hand and says, that's a great idea. I can afford $500. I can get 10 of my friends who are CEOs to do it too. And then, you know, take it to the chamber, take it to the mayor, whoever, and then it'll get its own momentum. It takes somebody to raise their hand and say, I'll do it. Now, I will gladly come there and lead the effort. But everything's local, so it has to be somebody who is what I call a tribal leader there in your region who says, I am going to be the solution in my community. We have given too much credit, by the way, to the president. God bless him. I'm honored to serve him. I was honored to serve the last three presidents. But we throw up our hands and say, oh, the president's got it, or the governor's got it, or I'm powerless. That's not true. It's just not true. Individuals changed America. Individuals made America. Dr. King had 70 employees. That's it. 70 people. Changed the world. Did it without firing a shot. The person listening who said that challenged me to launch a B-minus business compact in Miami or wherever in your region where they're listening to this program. I will respond to it. They can reach me at john.bryant@operationhope.org, by the way. That's my email address.
john.bryant@operationhope.org.
Okay, let's take a call or two. This is Alex in Miami. Hi, Alex.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I've been listening, and I agree with the gentleman 100%. I myself, I'm an immigrant who came here with nothing. And, managed to make my own business. And it's a story that is repeat itself here in Miami with our community. So, and it breaks my heart to see these young people waste their life or feel like there's no future for them when this country of ours has so much to offer, you know.
Yes.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Thank you for your calling. For calling.
By the way, 40% of all Fortune 500 CEOs are just like this gentleman, an immigrant. Every big business, I put this in my book, I detail it in How the Poor Can Save Capitalism in detail. 40% of all Fortune 500 companies, immigrants. Every big business wants a small one. The economy driven by small business is what's driving this economy. 70% of all employment in this country, 500 employees or less. Half of all employment, 100 employees or less. We are giving away too much of our power by saying that big business and government is somehow ruling our lives. We are being racked by fear, and we've got to get our storyline back.
Now, you say we need these startup businesses, and we just heard from, I forgot his name.
I did too.
I'm sorry. But the working poor, immigrants, the middle class, how do they procure the means to start this business when they're struggling just to get by? The minimum wage, you know, there's such controversy about that right now and raising it.
We're looking for love in all the wrong places. I've been doing so much with so little for so long, I can almost do anything with nothing. young man in Little Rock, Arkansas, just heard about this yesterday. He's working at the airport. They cut back he fired his friend as a window washer. They doubled his hours to 12 hours. He was about to die from working too much. He quits. His wife says, what are you doing? They turned off our lights today. He opens the yellow pages and see there's two window washing companies in all of Little Rock, Arkansas. He goes and gets a bucket, a squeegee, and water from his next-door neighbor because they cut his water off. He goes down the street and gets one client. One client tells the neighbor next door he did a really good job. Long story short, 4 years later, he's got 30 employees and a contract with the airport. We make this too difficult. In my book, I talk about Eric, who has a mobile detailing service. He went down to City Hall, got a $36 notary stamp. $36. That's less than you pay for a bad dinner tonight somewhere.
But these Horatio Alger sort of stories, are they really realistic for the bulk of people? Especially, yeah. You have parents with single family parents with three kids, they're working three jobs.
Just look at your week. I love tough questions. It's a very realistic question. First of all, your 9 to 5, if you're working somewhere, should finance your 5 to 9. Your 9 to 5 job is not a burden to you. It is an opportunity for somebody else to finance the research and development for your Avon business or your whatever it is you want to do. Primerica Life Insurance Company franchise can be started for $100. Let your 5 to 9 finance your 9 your 9-to-5 financial 5-to-9 vision, and make your employees, your coworkers, your first customers. And again, I go through in my book incredible detail about how to do this. But let me give you a practical example of this. You leave your work, go back a week. Listen, I want your listeners to do this now. Where'd you go? You went to the barbershop. How many people were working there? 4 people. You went to the beauty salon. How many people were working there? 6 people. You went to the nail salon. 8 people working there. You went to the dentist's office twice a year. I don't know. 8 people working there, max. I mean, my point is, your listeners just go through their week. It wasn't big business. It wasn't big government. 80 to 90% of their week, the biggest thing they fell in was a restaurant. Maybe it's 20 people working there. Their whole life experience, from the time they got up in the morning to the time they went to bed, was small business. And it wasn't, you know, some software company. It wasn't curing cancer. It was a gas station, a grocery store, the candy house I started when I was 10 years old. It was a notary business. It's basic stuff, but we're looking for love in all the wrong places. We think the solution is some big thing, but what I just described to you is what's driving a $17 trillion economy.
Would you tell us more about this Project 5117?
Yes. It's 5 million kids to make smart cool so kids want to stay in school. Quincy Jones, one of my mentors, says it takes 20 years to change a culture. In the last 20 years, we've made dumb sexy. We've dumbed down and celebrated it. And now we have to make smart sexy again. So we want to take 5 million kids of the 100,000 schoolhouses in this country, the 40 million kids, 4th grade through 12th grade, and we've got to make smart cool again so with those kids. Then what that leads into 1 million of those 5 million kids who, over the next 5 years, who will go through the Hope Business in a Box Academy that I just described to you, where I'm putting 2,000 of those in the public schools. Anybody, by the way, listening to your program thinks that I'm a dreamer. I've opened 100 locations in the last year. That's 51. 51-1 of 5117 is 1,000 Hope Inside locations. So I'm sitting right now at SunTrust Bank in Washington, D.C., where we have a Hope Inside inside of their bank branch. We've opened 50 of these in the last year inside of big banks, including Popular Community Bank and SunTrust and Regions, whatever. So my goal is 1,000, basically a Starbucks of financial inclusion, 1,000 Hope Insides inside a bank branch to do what? The last 7, move credit scores to 700, 5117. Nothing changes your life more than God or love than moving your credit score 120 points.
And how do you do that?
Well, people walk in. Ms. Sanchez walks in. She sits down in front of me. So, we pull a credit report with her authorization. Well, most people haven't done that in 5, 10 years, if ever. Mm-hmm. So first thing we find are errors. She says, that's not mine. That's not even me. Okay. When we clear up the errors, that's an initial 30, 40, 50 points. Then we negotiate down. Let's assume she's got a charge-off with, I'm going to pick on a company that doesn't exist anymore, PacBell. Okay, if it's PacBell, I know that company doesn't exist anymore. We go to the company that was sold the debt, and we say we would like to pay this for Ms. Sanchez. She'd like to pay it. What do you want? Well, we'll take $300. Okay, if we give you $325, will you remove from her credit report? Sure. Okay, so now that negative is pulled off. That's another 10 points. Mm. So now you have 40 points, and we've been talking to this lady for 20 minutes. Now, you know, it gets to hand-to-hand combat where you start getting down to fighting for 2 points here, 5 points there, but my team is good at that. We actually move credit scores 120 points over 24 months. But here's the big aha. Think about Miami now. You have a check casher next to a payday loan lender, next to a rent-to-own store, next to a liquor store, next to a title lending store. That's not racism. That's target marketing. And they're targeting a 500 credit score customer. And what I'm going to do, community by community, in these bank branches, credit unions, grocery stores, big box retailers, government offices. We actually have a Hope Inside in the city of Miami, by the way, and we're going to build from that in Miami. But
could we get you to move to South Florida, please?
It's great weather and great beaches. It's not a hard sell. But I want to see 100 Hope Insides in Miami. I want to see 200 Hope Business in a Box Academies in the capital for Latin America, Miami. And I want to see that in the next 3 to 4 years. And with that, you'll change Miami and change the region and create a growth mechanism. And kids who want to go want to stay in school. But my point was, if you can change that credit score in a 4-square block area around any one of my locations, the liquor store turns into a convenience store, the check casher turns into a credit union or a bank, the so-called poor neighborhood with no tax base becomes an emerging market with resources, and all the light switches come on. It's not rocket science.
We have to be on our way.
John, what was it? John Dash Bryant or John
Dot
Bryant?
My email address is john.bryant@operationhope.org. The Operation Hope address for information on Project 5117 is operationhope.org.
Well, we'll have to have you on sometime when we can talk and talk along.
I'll come back.
What about the book again?
Quickly. Oh, sorry. JohnHopeBryant.com for the book. Or they can just Google it. It's everywhere. It's the only bestseller in the world on economics by a black man.
Okay. How the Poor Can Save Capitalism, Rebuilding the Path to the Middle Class. We've been speaking with John Hope Bryant. And he was appointed by President Obama to the President's Advisory Council on Financial Capability for Young Americans. We thank you so much for joining us. And next time, we'll have a little bit longer with you.
And my deep honor. Invite me to come to Miami for beach in an interview, and I'll come over.
Okay, we'll do that. Thanks for joining us.
Food and Dining is next. And we return. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman. Bonnie, I'm about ready to go out and start a business after that.
I know. It's very inspiring. But I'm too busy eating.
Yeah, I can see that. Well, Linda Gassenheimer joins us now. She's back from covering the 47th annual Pillsbury Bake Off. Now, this wasn't your 47th. To cover, is it?
I'm not going to answer that, Cooper.
Well, we'll also have this year's $1 million winner with us. I'm sure she's still breathless, for the winner was only just announced today.
No, yesterday.
Well, how many bake-offs have you gone to, Linda?
Many. Many, yes.
And you've been judged also.
And once I was a judge. Yes, I'm going to talk about that later on, what it's like to be a judge. Mm. It's amazing, amazing. But can you imagine what kind of recipe could be worth $1 million? Well, our guest certainly can. She's the grand prize winner, and it was announced on the Chew yesterday at 1 p.m. And her name is Beth Royals, and her winning recipe is peanutty pie crust clusters. And I've brought some here for you guys to taste.
I know, mm-hmm. It's really good.
So how do you create an award-winning recipe? What's it like to be cooking in front of all those people, especially on television and all? Well, she's going to tell us. Welcome, Beth Royals. Are you with us?
How are you? Yes, how are you?
Great. I'm not going to ask how you are. Do you still have a smile on your face?
I do. I do. We flew in late last night, and it still hasn't sunk in yet. So.
Well, let's invite our listeners to join us. Do you have any questions about a cooking contest? How do you become a winner? How do you develop a recipe? Well, give us a call. That's 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. And Bonnie, we have email today.
radio@WLRN.org.
Great. And we're on Twitter as well, yes?
It's just hard to pull it up sometimes, but they can try it. I'll try to get it up.
Okay, great. Okay. Also with us, of course, is our favorite wine guy, Fred Tasker. He's joining us by Skype. And you can read Fred's wine suggestions for my Dinner in Minutes column that's in today's Miami Herald. And you can also read his wine column that is now in the Saturday food section of the Miami Herald. Fred, what are we drinking today?
Well, I'm going to talk about some $1 million wine matches for these $1 million recipes.
Well, that sounds good to me. Okay, Beth Royals, first of all, congratulations. Have you come down to earth at all?
Not really. It's it was such a shock, and I'm trying to let it all sink in right now.
Well, this year the contest was a little different from when I was judging it. The judges chose there's 100 finalists, and they chose four from four different categories. That's amazing, doable dinners, savory snacks and sides, simply sweet treats, and weekend breakfast wows. And then the public voted on this. And so they announced it yesterday. What was it like waiting? I mean, they announced it at the end of the program, so like you were waiting the whole hour. What was it like there?
It was. There was a little bit of tension, and we had been in New York for 3 days, and so it was really three straight days of wondering, you know, what the outcome was going to be, and we didn't know any of the scores going into it, so it was kind of a lot of adrenaline.
I can imagine. So the first day on the CHU, they showed the contest, and then they showed you the second day they showed you cooking your recipes. And so you had no inkling in advance as to who would be the winner?
No, the judges' score were added to the voting scores, and so we didn't and still don't know how either of those played out. So everything was just a total surprise.
Wow. Okay. Well, let's talk about your winning recipe. Why don't you describe it? Well, I made some last night when I found out what it was going to be. And Joe and Bonnie have already eaten. You've already eaten yours.
We have more, too.
Yeah, we have more. Tell us about the recipe, Beth.
Well, they're peanutty pie crust clusters. And it's really baked pie crust squares that have been enrobed in a white chocolate peanut butter mixture, and in there are some peanuts and toffee bits. So, you know, when I was trying to come up with the recipe,
I
wanted
see
there to be
coffee in there now. Yeah,
toffee. Yeah,
toffee.
Yeah,
it adds a little crunch, and then you have the creaminess of the, you know, the melting white chocolate and the flakiness of the pie crust. So I really wanted to come up with something, that was quick and easy, but it was something that hadn't been done with pie crust before. So it took a lot of brainstorming because it really was hard to think of, you know, something original for that.
Well, it has to be original, and they do check very carefully to make sure. But, Joe, you said this reminded you of a
payday candy bar a little bit.
Well, I don't know what a payday candy bar is.
It's one that's covered with nuts.
Yes?
I didn't know what it was either. I thought I was deprived because I'd never heard of it.
But Beth, you know of it, right?
Yes, I've heard of it. And it does have some of those qualities. So. Mm-hmm.
Oh, well. So let me tell you how I made it. Well, first, you have to buy the Pillsbury dough sheet, pie sheet, and you make it into little tiny squares and bake them. And so how did you get all those squares out of the baking pan?
Well, actually, you just set the, you know, just take it out of the refrigerator and unroll the Pillsbury pie crust, and just you cut it 16 across and 16 down. And it's actually, you know, pretty easy because you start, you know, four sections and then cut the four in half and those in half. So it really does go quickly. And once you have little squares, you just take a spatula and, scoop them up and just sprinkle them onto a cookie sheet.
Now, if you hadn't said Pillsbury pie crust, would they take the award away if you just said pie crust?
She doesn't have to say it.
It is a specific type of pie crust. And to enter the contest, you do need to use the qualifying product. So, I had the Crisco butter flavor that was in there and the Jif peanut butter. So that's added to the white chocolate. And that kind of makes that mixture what it is. My 11-year-old son calls it a bowl of melted goodness.
I'll bet they do.
That's the word around our house.
Sorry, can you freeze it?
Actually, I had someone the other day said that they have them they were kind of rationing them. People do say they're a little addictive, and they put them in the freezer, and then they go in and get one each day. So I know they freeze well.
One a day. Now, of course, I want to ask you what you're going to do with that $1 million.
Wow. We have two sons, 16 and 11. One is 2 years away from college, and we are not saved up for that. So I think the peace of mind to know that they'll both be able to go to college and really practical things. I don't have any exciting answers for you, but a lot of home repairs we've put off and things that, you know, once again, getting them done will bring us a lot of peace of mind.
I bet it will. That's wonderful. And but you got another prize as well, didn't you, as kitchen?
We did get, I get $10,000 in GE appliances, and I have more stories of a dishwasher and a washing machine that is in need of help right now, and so the timing couldn't be better for us with being able to get some new appliances. So I'm really grateful.
Well, That's terrific. Let's tell people a little bit what it was like to be on the floor. I mean, here you are in a hotel. We were in Nashville, Tennessee, and they're playing the great country music the whole time.
Right.
You've got 100 of you cooking all at once. What was it like for you?
There's a lot of energy in the room, and, you know, there's a little bit of tension because people are, you know, are nervous thinking if I mess it up, you know, if it doesn't go in right, have I cost myself, that prize money. So, a little bit of nervousness, but, for me, I really just try to pretend that I'm kind of in my home kitchen cooking for friends and family, and just focus and just say to myself, hey, you've made this over and over, just do it like you do it at home, and kind of soak in the experience. So I, made it once. And I was pretty happy with them. And so I said, we have 3 tries. I said, I've got 2 more times, and I'm going to walk around, the bake-off floor and just get to know more of the people and sample and just enjoy it. I was there in 2004 and 2006, and it went by so quickly that
this is your 3rd time entering.
Yeah.
Being a finalist, actually.
Right. And there's a 3-time and you're out rule, so... it was my last shot at it. So,
wow.
I'm even more grateful.
Okay. That's terrific. And just to let people know, when you go onto the floor, you can't take anything with you. So what about the ingredients now? How do you get that?
Yeah, they have enough to make the recipe 3 times already at the station. So it's an overwhelming thought to think the person who oversees that you have 300 full recipe ingredient sets, really. And it's just amazingly well organized. So you get there and everything is there. You've approved ahead of time the pans that you need. If there are any corrections, ahead of time, you need to let them know, what's
right.
missing. And so it is really well organized.
Amazing. Everyone has their own refrigerator. It's just really amazing.
Well,
we need to take a short break here. I'm Linda
okay.
Gassenheimer, and my guest today is Beth Royals, the $1 million Bake Off winner. We'll take a short break, and we'll be back with more. And we're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and my guest today is Beth Royals. She's a new millionaire. Bet that sounds good to her. She just won the top prize at this year's 47th Pillsbury Bake Off. And the winner was announced live on the 2 television show yesterday. And she's been telling us about her recipe. We've been eating it here because I made it mm-hmm. last night. And she's been giving us tips on how she entered the show. So it's dinner in minutes time. We've had our dessert, so let's have dinner now. It's an Italian sausage minestrone, and maybe this is a good recipe for you for after the holiday indulgences. And it's a dinner that won't break your calorie bank. So it's sausage, fresh vegetables, pecans, and basil. It makes a 20-minute soup. And I know, Joe, what you're going to ask.
What kind of sausage?
Is it turkey?
It's a one-pot meal. And you could use whatever sausage, but yes, I did use a turkey sausage. So I sauteed sliced sausages with a little green beans and some onions for a few minutes. And then I added some chicken broth, some diced whole tomatoes, fresh tomatoes diced, and just simmer it for 10 minutes. And after that, I added some spinach and some basil and just let the spinach wilt in the soup. And that's it. To go into the soup, I have a little soup pasta called acini pepe, but any kind of small soup pasta will work. Boil that up and put it in the soup. That complete recipe, it's at dinnerinminutes.com. And another chicken recipe, it's in today's Miami Herald, chicken piccata with spaghetti. And also the winning recipe and a photograph, this peanutty pie crust clusters is on my website as well, dinnerinminutes.com. And please follow me on Twitter. That's at L. Gassenheimer, or now Instagram, Linda Gassenheimer. Okay, Fred, what are we drinking?
First I want to know, are all of these recipes online someplace so we can try them out?
All the recipes are at Pillsbury.com.
Oh, great. I want to try out some of those things. They sound great.
Okay.
Anyway, I've gotten into the spirit of these $1 million baking awards so strongly that I'm going to make some $1 million awards myself. Mine will be for wines that are $1 million matches for the $1 million candidate recipes. And here are the 4 finalists. First, to go with the Cuban-style sandwich pockets that were one of the finalists, you need a nice, fruity, light-bodied red wine, and I'd suggest probably a Pinot Noir or a Shiraz or something like
that. And that Cuban sandwich was really delicious. I have to say that I tasted most of the food when I was at the show, all 100 of them.
Yeah, you and I have tasted some of these contests like that, and you get a little bit full after a while, don't you?
For sure.
Anyway, for the sweet and creamy corn-filled sweet peppers, which is a recipe that I want to try, you want a sweet and creamy white wine, and that is a perfect description of a good fat California Chardonnay. Now, the choice for the peanut buttery pie crust million-dollar clusters is simple. I have always said that one of the world's finest flavor pairings is peanut butter spooned straight from the jar and a rich, red, powerful $100 a bottle port.
Wow. Okay, peanut butter and port sounds good.
Or you could use a $13 ruby port too, and it would still be pretty good.
Okay.
Anyway, for the chocolate donut poppers, I would go with a nice, sweet, sparkling red wine from Italy called Lambrusco. Good stuff. Now, with that taken care of, I would like to add a few practical wine tips for entertaining during the Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa season. And, of course, it's not just the actual day of the Hollywood. Friends might drop by at any time, so you have to be ready. So here's what I suggest. As soon as this program ends in a few minutes, go out and buy a few bottles of nice $15 or $20 wine. And you wrap them in gay paper, and you put a blank sticker on them and hide them in a closet. That way, if somebody drops by and hands you a gift, you can retrieve a bottle and hurriedly scribble their name on the tag and look as if you had it waiting for them all along. Second, if you want to throw a party, I always suggest handing your guests a glass of modest bubbly champagne or sparkling wine as they walk in the door. It's just a nice friendly gesture to let them know they're welcome. And of course, if you're buying a lot of wine for a big party, I don't think you need to feel the bottles need to cost more than that same $15 or $20. You could go broke buying more expensive stuff for a lot of people. And two, people are chatting and singing carols and such, and they're not paying much attention to the wines they're drinking anyway. Now, I haven't talked about wines for the actual holiday meals. We'll get into that in a later program.
Okay, sounds good. Beth Royals, so did you ever think of having a powerful port with your clusters, your peanutty clusters?
I didn't, but I'll try it now that I've
You can get the $100 one, right?
That's right.
Well, that's right. She can get $100 bottles for all of us.
Okay. So I want to know, you've entered the contest. This is your third time. When you send in recipes, do you send in more than one recipe?
I do usually try to send one in at least, each of the categories.
Okay.
Just to kind of try, for variety's sake. And I, try to use, most of the products, that they have as sponsors, ones that you need to use, just to kind of cover the bases there.
Right. And so when you find out that you won, then they bring you to Nashville with your family?
Yes.
Or to wherever it's going to be?
Exactly. So they say they get, tens of thousands, and we're not sure how many, and they pick the 100, and then, the top, and this was new with the voting phase of it. So usually the four would be chosen, let's say in Nashville, and you'd go up on the stage and they'd choose the $1 million winner. But this time there was a 3-week long excruciating wait.
Oh my God, yes. You had to wait all that time. Well, let me just tell you what goes on in the judging room. Actually, when I judged, it's pretty daunting to give away $1 million, and it's serious business. They took my cell phone, they escorted me to the restroom. Every time we make a decision, there's a lawyer right there. I have to sign a paper to say that it was my decision. Nobody told me about it. And all the decisions, they had to be unanimous.
What do you mean nobody told you about it? You mean nobody influenced
Influenced me in any way.
Interesting.
That's right. Wow. And, we took a long time because we picked the four. And there are many other prizes that are given away. GE gives a prize, and Jif, I mean, many of the other sponsors give their own prizes. So you have to select all of those. But
right.
The $1 million winner is selected from the four, as you mentioned. And then we all get around and have to be unanimous about that winner. And I have to tell you, we went till 7 o'clock at night, and once we got there, they brought us champagne, and boy, did we need it.
I can imagine. It's a big decision that you know you're making, and people have different preferences, I would think, in food taste. So it to come together and agree on such a big decision is, wow, I bet that can go for a while.
Yeah. Well, this has been fun. I have so many more questions we wanted to ask, but we're out of time. It's been a very tasty week. Beth Royals, thank you so much for joining us. And once more, congratulations.
Thanks for having me.
And I just wanted to also mention that if you want to go to the Pillsbury Bake Off site, it's very interesting because it gives you trends as to what you see happening. And I've just been told we have a little more time, so I'm going to give it a little more time here. All right.
Okay.
So here are the trends that they found from the all the entries. Because when people enter, I'm sure, like, Beth, I read that you like cookbooks.
Yes. I love collecting cookbooks.
Or they watch the food shows, or they read magazines, cooking magazines. So this year's... they felt that ethnic street food is really going to become something, snackable foods as well.
You mean food trucks?
Ethnic foods, like the Cuban sandwich.
Oh, okay.
So, and street foods that are easy to eat that you find. And then they said fruity citrus flavors made a sweet and tangy for everyday meals. They had lemon poppy seed pull-apart bread and that kind of thing, and glazed orange muffins. And then... eat your veggies. And that came out with people doing more and more vegetables with their recipes. And that was the creamy corn-filled sweet pepper category. Okay, so Fred Tasker, great advice as always.
Always a pleasure.
Bonnie and Joe, great to be with you.
Great to be with you.
Well, next week is going to be our annual kitchen gift gadget show.
Uh-huh.
And it'll be 1 hour from 1 to 2 p.m. So... I'm Linda Gassenheimer.
Talking about trends.
Yes. You're going to get a lot of things here. Fun gifts. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Join me then.
And thanks for being with us for this all too short hour. Our producer is Richard Ives with technical direction provided by online producer Paul Leary. Check out the Topical Currents Facebook page for insightful information, links, discussion, and yes, even photos. It's easy to download free audio archives at our website, WLRN.org. Tomorrow at 1, it's Ed Bell on the South Florida Arts Beat. Join Ed for another live performance from our WLRN studios with jazz musician extraordinaire, Ira Sullivan. Topical Currents returns on Monday with Daniel Jones. He's the Modern Love New York Times columnist, and he's written Love Illuminated. Thanks so much for joining us, Bonnie Berman for Joseph Cooper and Linda Gassenheimer. Have a great day. Stay tuned for a great weekend. Stay tuned for Here and Now, up next from NPR News.